for listening to tonight's show. You can connect with Take Two Radio on Twitter at Take Two Radio and at Dawn Take Two Radio. You can also look us up on Facebook at Take Two Radio. Check out our website at TakeTwoRadio.com and follow us on Blog Talk so you can stay up to the minute of each episode as we add it. Each episode is always available for download immediately following each broadcast. And you can also download every podcast on iTunes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us at Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host. Yes, I'm back, sort of, anyhow. I'm going to try this. Of course, I have with me my trusty friend and co-host, Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Pam. It's so nice to be on the opposite side of this tonight. I must tell you, after the day I've had, it's like, oh, just in time. Well, I'm glad to hear you are listen to me. I'm glad to hear you're hosting and you're back in the air chair taking the lead tonight. Not that I minded, but I'm just glad that you're feeling better and up to it. So welcome back.
Thanks. I'm trying to talk myself into it, I think, more than anything else. But we're very happy to have with us tonight singer, songwriter, producer, multitasker to the max, I should just say, Louise Goffin. Hello, Louise.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you gals doing on the East Coast there?
Yeah, well, she's on the East Coast. She's in North Carolina, and I'm in Chicago. So, and just watching the news a little bit earlier, and they're saying the East Coast is going to get slammed with some kind of horrible blizzard. So prepare yourself, Dawn.
And, you know, I've had my head in work all day. I have not even seen the weather, so this is news to me because just a few days ago they were saying it was supposed to be, like, somewhat mild being mid-50s for the weekend.
Yeah.
So something has taken a dramatic turn. Oh, my gosh. Well, Louise, thank you and welcome to our show and
thank
for being
you.
Here tonight. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, are you on the West Coast?
I am. It's still it's the afternoon right now. Late afternoon.
Lucky. Okay, well, I think it's time for us to move.
I guess
we'll start out with you being the daughter of Carole King and Gary Goffin. Would you say that you were born with music in your blood?
I don't know if I had it in my blood, but I definitely had it in my environment.
Yeah.
It was a, you know, I don't know about the nurture or, you know, whatever it is, but I do know that I was surrounded by songwriting, and my grandmother, who was my mother's mother, knew a lot of show tunes and played a lot of piano, and my parents were young and songwriting, so my grandmother would often sit me on her lap when I was two at the piano and play little songs together with me.
So did you learn how to play the piano from your grandmother then?
I actually taught myself how to play the piano. I'm very self-taught. And it's only at this stage in my life where all the influences that have influenced my musicianship have come together, because I never really was properly trained on the piano, and I didn't really have confidence that I was a piano player because I had this belief that I had to be a... you know, that I had to be someone trained who could read and write music to be considered a piano player. Then I got a piano teacher, and he said, you know a lot. So he said, show me what you know. And I could play, you know, I could play Boogie Woogie, and I could, you know, play a lot of classical stuff, and, you know, my fingering was right. And basically, I'm a better musician not... I don't want to say I'm a better musician not knowing how to play, but I'm actually something comes through me that is beyond anything I could have learned. There's just a innate, you know, psychic thing with music. And
right.
I definitely think that's genetically inherited because I've seen my mother do the same thing at the piano, just play, you know, she would call it play to the gods. You're not playing for any effect other than you're playing to the gods. And you're not trying to capture it or turn it into something or make money from it. You're just expressing something that comes through, and then it's gone. You know, it just comes through and it's gone. Yeah.
Well, that sounds a heck of a lot better than my chopsticks.
No, I have a lot of fun with chopsticks. I have a lot of variations on that song that I play with, you know, one of my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my dad was a piano player, and he used to always want to teach us kids, but we just didn't want to have anything to do with it. So I guess even as a small child, you'll know whether or not you want to get into that most of the time, I would believe,
mm-hmm.
if some kind of instrument or music or anything. Now, singing, I would sing on top of my lungs, not that it was any good, but, you know, I enjoyed that. And when I hit high school, I went into the chorus and stuff. But I really didn't have any want or need to learn an instrument. And now I'm kind of sorry I don't know that.
Yeah, you know, enjoy. This is something I tell, you know, people starting out, that enjoyment is the key to getting good at an instrument. Is find that, you know, it's like if you enjoy going to the gym, you'll go to the gym. If you don't and you're forcing yourself
right.
to, you won't. It's just, as soon as I learn a piece or a song, you know, I remember years ago just becoming enchanted with a Billie Holiday song, and I would just listen to it in my car, and then before I knew it, I'd sit down at the piano, and I was playing chords similar to it, with not a whole bunch of training, by the way. It just kind of happened as an osmosis. And then just by getting into that and enjoying, oh, this shape, and oh, that shape, then I wrote a song that was influenced and informed by that. So enjoyment begets mastery over time.
Right.
That's my experience. Some people might not say that. A tennis pro might not say that. They might have to say, you know, you have,
yeah.
you have to do that, and it won't always be fun. Yeah.
It's your philosophy. It's what
it's
works
just
for
my
you.
Experience. It's been mm-hmm. my experience. Yeah.
Right. Okay. How do you feel music has changed since you've grown up?
Well, this came up recently. It's changed so many times, really. It's not just
mm-hmm.
one change. It's, I mean, there's actually a lot about music that has remained the same, which is, for me, music is always first and foremost about the song. And you can listen to a song from any era, and if it's a great song, that song will still be great today, maybe
right.
50 years after it was written, and people can do it in a different genre or a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes have trouble understanding what's interesting about beats and, well, I love rhythms, but just, you know, samples and that. But I do see it as expressive. Almost like performance art, where, you know, we went through the Jackson Pollock stage where you just throw splatter on and that would be, oh, we'll call that art. But everything has its place. And, you know, some of these Jay-Z records or Kanye West records, they can get very creative because the limitation of, you know, not being able to play an instrument, if you have something to say, if you have a point of view, you can take from so many different places, sample them, throw it together in you know, your own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that that's happening. And I love what's happening also with the fact that a lot of artists are taking control of their own record making, record promotion, social media, because for me, it's just more fun to be able to make a single and instantly put it out there if I want, you know, design artwork on my laptop. And that's just a pretty fun thing. It used to be you had to go through a whole machine, you know, starting
right.
in the 80s particularly, but even earlier, you had to go through this machine to see the light of day. So I think it's empowering the way music and the business of music has changed. It doesn't lead to large incomes so much for everyone, but the way it used to be, you'd have the large incomes of the few, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of people would not take part in that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, you lived in England for 10 years, and how would you
mm-hmm.
say British music differs from American music?
Well, I think it's always changing there in the same way it's always changing here. I haven't I mean, I'm actually going over there next month visiting and writing, but, you know, it's there's always new stuff. What I did notice about living in England is that the turnover of music is way faster than here. It's, you know, the life of a hit, so to speak, record, mm-hmm. is a lot typically shorter than it is here in America. It's on to the next. And there's also a British philosophy that, you know, once someone's huge and big, you know, they're kind of, well, the press particularly are looking for the next thing. They're always looking for what's just coming out of the ground and what's, you know, fresh and people who haven't, quote unquote, sold out. That was what was going on when I lived there. And I don't know if it still is, but generally the media, the press has a bigger effect on record sales there than here because it's a smaller community and, you know, there's just a few stations of television and people read the same publications. Yeah.
Sean?
Well, Louise, I wanted to ask you, you know, you produced your mom Grammy-nominated album, A Holiday Carol, and I was just curious, you know, what was it like working with her in that capacity, being, you know, the producer of her album?
It was a really great experience. It wasn't something that I thought, you know, my first reaction wasn't, wow, this is going to be great. My first reaction was, can I do this successfully? You know, can I have a positive experience, and will this be a positive experience for the both of us? And I really meditated on it. I really searched my intuition on it. And I definitely didn't want to come in being someone who worked for her, who couldn't use her skills, and I wanted to bring my full self and musical ears into it. And mm-hmm. once I realized that she was giving me full range of, you know, this, you're going to run with this because I don't have, she really didn't have a lot of energy to make a record. She was finishing up this memoir, which has come out, A Natural Woman, and she'd been working on it for 7 years. It came out in February of last year, and it's a New York Times bestseller. Really great story, and, you know, written by her, not ghostwritten. She's a good writer, and she's a funny writer. And that New York, you know, streetwise way. She just wanted to get that done. She said, you know, I've been working on this, and I just need to finish this record, finish that. And she doesn't even live in L.A., so it was, you just do this record, and we'll meet, and when I come out, I'll do vocals, and then I'll leave, and you'll work on the tracks. And so that's what it was. And the first half of the record was, you know, it was a little difficult because I didn't have her around to sing as much as I would have liked to. So I'd have to work with, you know, a few vocal takes. And mm-hmm. but I'm quite good at, you know, I'm a very persistent person, especially when it comes to music. Like, I hear, when I hear something, and I, you know, I sometimes use the word perfectionism, but I actually don't think it's perfectionism. I think it's a level of excellence that you can use, you know, as an expression for anything artistic. You know, when those skills are applied to life, it becomes perfectionism. But I really heard where things could be and just used every resource that I had to make the tracks as great as they could be. And I was lucky to work with just the most talented engineer, just great people, great musicians. So I had so much support around me. And then once we got the first 4 or 5 songs, she could hear what it was turning into and got excited. And once she got excited, she's like, okay, I'm coming to L.A. and I'm booking myself there for 6 weeks. And we're going to get the band and we're going to cut the rest of the songs live on the floor. And then all of a sudden we were like sailing out to sea with some velocity. And it just was that beginning of believing and, you know, not giving up and knowing that it could be great.
Right, right. Well, congratulations on the Grammy nomination for it, because I think you've come through with what you wanted to do.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because I just found an email from her. I think it was written either end of 2009 or beginning of 2010, way when this was a germ of an idea. And I said, I've been up all night listening to Christmas songs on iTunes. Here's my list, and I wrote a list, and I think two of the songs on that initial list ended up on the record. And she was like, "This is gonna be great. This is gonna turn into something. I have no brain space for this now, but we'll sit down and we'll go over the list." And that was just all it was in the beginning, was a spark of enthusiasm. And I remember that day listening to iTunes. My objective was, I want to just make another Christmas record. You know, what's wintry that isn't a normal Christmas song? And it was fun research. Yeah.
Well, so, I want to share with you that I've been a big fan of your mom's for a long time. Loved her music, always have. And a couple of years ago, back in July of 2011, my boyfriend I was seeing at the time, he passed away unexpectedly. Two or three days after he passed, he had two older sisters, and one of his sisters came up to me at the cemetery, and she handed me an envelope, and it had a letter inside, and she had found the lyrics to your mother's song, Now and Forever, online, and she had typed those lyrics onto, you know, a piece of paper and gave that to me. It was in the envelope. Because she, you know, his family loved me and I loved them, and it was very, very mutual. And so I thought that was such a heartfelt, you know, gesture. And ironically, that was one song by your mother that I had never heard until, so as soon as I left there, of course, I came home, I, you know, Googled it, I found it online, and I listened to it, and I could not believe, you know, how fitting it was for that moment. And so it really has come to mean a lot to me, that song in particular, because of what, you know, what happened in my life. But I wanted to pass that along to you because your mom is a phenomenal songwriter, and she's just a terrific artist, and I've always loved her music. Everything she's done has just been, it's been so, so wonderful. And so, you know, I just wanted to share that with you because that song really came to mean a great deal to me.
Great. I'll have to look it up. I'm not familiar with that one offhand, so I'll look it up.
Yeah, and it's funny because I know that it was in A League of Their Own. It was featured in that motion picture soundtrack from that movie. And I don't know. I've been a music mogul and fan my entire life. I don't know how that song got by me, but it's a beautiful song. It's beautifully written. The words are just very, very, you know, well crafted, and you know, and it's about two people in love and finding the love of your life, and it's beautifully written. I mean, that's the only way I could sum it up, but it's a great song. So yes, you should definitely check that out. And I also wanted to ask you, now that you produced an album for your mother, do you think you would do this again in the future with her?
Yeah, I absolutely would. I don't think she's going to be up for doing it this year, you know, so, yeah.
Well, I was wondering on one of the songs that caught my eye and that you included in the album was the Hanukkah prayer. How did you come up with an idea to make that into a song?
Well, it's something that I had heard generationally in my life. My father, my grandparents, my mother knew it, and I always felt that it was very musical, and I never knew the words. I never knew the Hebrew. I was never someone who went to Hebrew school. I wasn't bat mitzvahed. I wasn't someone who spent a lot of time in that world. I felt like my religion was music, pop music.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I had children of my own, I suddenly felt a little lacking in that, you know, this was their heritage, and I knew little about how to pass it down to them, and I didn't even know how to sing the song or what the words meant or what the words were when Hanukkah came. I mean, I had memorized it phonetically, like five-year-olds mm-hmm. memorize words phonetically, and I could get a little bit into it, but that was it. So I can't remember how it came about, but I just heard the melody. I heard her do it, and I said, yeah, I gotta record you doing that. And I just put a click track and a drone. It was just, because it's all, it's all over one chord. You can do it over one chord. It's a meditative chanting sound. So I did that. I got a click track and I played a chord and got a couple of takes of her singing that. Then she left town. Maddeningly, I lost that file for a long time because I didn't label it properly. I think we were working on another song, and I had the idea while we're in the middle of another song, and I probably recorded it at the end of that song and never labeled it its own thing. I mean, I've learned my lessons now about that, but I was fortunate that I had someone working for me. I said, can you please go through my entire drive and find this? And she did. I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
And then I was working with Lee Carreri, who does a lot of great arrangements. And he particularly, what's really special is that he's a horn player. So not only does he play every instrument and write and produce and arrange, but he plays horn, so he'll sit next to his recording and have all these horns, like a French horn, a trumpet, and just, press, play, and record, and do one part, double it, play another part, double it, play another part. And then before you know it, you've got these incredible horns on things. So, I brought it to him, and I said, here's what I'm hearing around this vocal. I'm hearing, and I just described what it was. I wanted a Bill Evans, kind of Miles Davis, jazzy thing that was like an Exodus almost. And he came up with those chords, and, then it became multi-generational. Then my son, who's, an amazing musician, he was 8 at the time. He sung a part, I sung a part, she sung a part. So it was a real homage to, I have a barking beagle here in California.
He's singing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I wondered if the grandson that was on there was your son. So that's pretty cool that you all three got to do that on the one song. I mean, that must have been pure joy for your mom.
Yeah, it was. And for me, too, because, as long as I've had kids, my kids, have seen me make records. I mean, when first son was born, I put out a record on DreamWorks, and, he got to see me do some shows, and he's in a video. He has a very young baby for a second. And I was always, making music, and they'd be hearing it in the car, and they'd see me sit at the piano, and they'd see me pick up a guitar. So it was really nice for me to be able to bring that influence in, just of my own household, which is very artistic and musically expressive.
Are both of your sons musical or just your one?
Oh, both of them. They're both incredibly musical. Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll be hearing some hit records from them shortly, right?
I don't think shortly, but before
you know
it.
Well,
you
could always get them on the Disney Channel. That's where the kids do a lot of their singing, so that would be good if they were interested in it, of course.
Yeah.
As much as you have done in your respective career, from producing, writing, and performing, what aspect of that do you prefer the most, that you enjoy the most?
Oh, hands down, songwriting. That's just that's the assigned job from the universe. The other stuff is more about getting a gig, performing, all that's all more work. And it is, you know, going back to the tennis pro metaphor with what you love, for example, doing gigs and making records is something that with practice you can just get good at. If you keep practicing it, you make mistakes, you take the feedback, you know, the attitude that it's feedback rather than failure, you know,
mm-hmm,
you just
mm-hmm.
take that information and you go, oh, I want to do it this way next time, or maybe I'll try coming at it from a different angle. And I've just, by virtue of doing it so long, I just got to a point where I felt I know what to do. And I know what to do, yet I still have that that wonderment and that mystery of, I don't know how this one's going to work out, but what I'm hearing is it'd be really fun to put bass on this, and it'd be really fun to, you know, try a harp on top of it, whatever it would be. Each song is its own mystery to unravel arrangementally. So playing live and making records and singing and playing an instrument are all things that get honed with practice. Same with songwriting, but songwriting has a different dimension for me, which is a spiritual one. It's like going to church. It's like writing in your journal. It's like talking to your therapist. It's like talking to, you know, your best friend about something deep. It just is a way to heal. I think songwriting is a path of self-discovery, and at the same time, what's so great about it is it helps other people. So when I hear a great song, it puts into words something that I may not know how to put into words, but it's mm-hmm. access this part of my heart and DNA that's, you know, there's a certain Aretha Franklin records where you just can't capture it any other way. So, in answer to your question, is songwriting keeps me alive and, you know, believing in a greater influence, a greater hand in life than my own personal plan, which is never
right.
very,
yeah.
you know, can't see really beyond the next week most times.
Well, I kind of feel that way in a way. When I'm sad, I seem to write poetry more than if I'm happy. And it's a way to release what I'm feeling inside or discover what I'm feeling inside and move past it. And, you know, a lot of people share their feelings like that with other people when they write their poetry. So it's kind of a healing process, too. And I could see, you know, songs are like that as well.
I'm glad you have that.
Thank you. Thank you. It just all of a sudden came to me one day and never left me. So I'm happy to have it. I was wondering, you've worked with a lot of many great people like Jackson Browne and toured with Tears for Fears and David Gilmour, Pink Floyd and that. If you could choose musicians to work on a song like We Are the World, who would you choose to be in that group?
Well, I actually once did something like that in London. It was something to save the forest, and it was just like We Are the World. It was a huge studio full of celebrities, and frankly, I forgot that I had done it, and then somebody showed it to me on YouTube. I almost died. I went, oh, my God, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so, and there's me. What? I mean, I barely remember being there. I actually had a couple lines that I sung on my own, you know, either before or after Kate Bush, and I'm going, what? I don't remember doing any of that. So who would I choose? I mean, there's like 30 people on those records. Are you asking me what 30 people I would choose?
No, not 30, but, you know, a few.
Well, okay. This is going to require me walking over to my vinyl collection right now because I recently pulled out my vinyl player, which I set up in the 90s, and I don't know how long I had it. It's a Sony, but it's got a nice stylus, and I set it up, and I suddenly got out my vinyl records, and I went recently to here. We have a ginormous independent record store called Amoeba, which is like all the little wonderful side street ones you see throughout America all put together in one. So I'm just going to tell you what my second vinyl collection is. Smile by the Beach Boys. You can never go wrong with Brian Wilson's songs and arrangements.
Definitely.
And he played a tour just, I guess, 3 years ago, and he had a huge band, and they played all the arrangements, you know, full on from Beach Boy Records, and it was amazing. I think he couldn't afford to make any money having such a big band. I have Stevie Wonder, Music of My Mind, The Beatles' Rubber Soul, Wilson Pickett in the Midnight Hour. I love Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. And I just got given as a gift the entire Led Zeppelin catalog.
Oh, wow.
Which is just the best. And when my grandmother passed away, she had quite a vinyl collection. She had these 50s records that just sound huge. You put them on in the arrangements and the reverb. They probably recorded most of those in one room with all the instruments leaking into the same mics. I'm probably getting a little technical here.
No.
I think sometimes I go to Goodwill stores, and I find really great records for a couple of dollars. Like Dionne Warwick I got for a few dollars, Burt Bacharach. So, you know, I would definitely have Joni Mitchell on in the room in one of those. You know, one of my most damaged records here, it's completely waterlogged, is Leonard
Bernstein.
I had
that happen. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, I just couldn't throw it away, but it's Leonard Bernstein, New York Philharmonic Tchaikovsky Nutcracker Suite. I used to listen at 5 years old to Peter and the Wolf. And putting that on, oh, God, it sends me back. But that's, I think that taught me that every feeling has a sound, you know, has its own sound. Anyway. So I don't know if that's the full-on list. It certainly isn't the full-on list. It's, you know, I'm a fan of popular music. Neil Young. Neil Young is just, he made the coolest records, and he made the records he wanted to make.
Right.
Classic.
Well, I noticed that when I listened, I'm sorry. I noticed when I listened to your music on SoundCloud that you don't fit just one genre. There's so many different types of music that you do, so you can hear the influence by the other artists that you listen to and that you enjoy, you know, being in your music.
Mhm. Yeah, at this point I don't really trace the influences so much, because I feel like it just got all mixed around in my DNA and
yeah,
you know, which one's firing at any particular moment. Yeah.
Well, I know that your parents had to be a huge inspiration in your life. Do you feel that there's any one person that stands out that inspired you the most?
Oh, well, I think the two of them definitely did. I mean, by osmosis, they were neither of them were the type of parents who'd sit down and go, you know, here's what you do. Although my mother, when I was younger, heard me working out songs. I remember I was working out Martha, My Dear by Paul McCartney. And I got to a certain point, and then I was trying to figure out the chord, and she sat down next to me and said, oh, I think it goes like this. You know, she has a very, very good ear. My son is the same. They just hear stuff and immediately can play it. You know, it was like this.
Aww.
Hear any of that? And now,
yeah.
And now my son plays it. So, yes, it's fun to work music out. It's fun to be able to share. Sharing music in a family is a really great thing.
Well, what do you have coming up on the horizon? You know, January's already gone from this year already, and but are you currently working on any projects?
Yeah, first of all, this week is Grammy week, and it's, you know, I've never had so much social time. I mean, it's nice and fun. when that's over, my main objective is writing songs, and I would like to perform. I recently have been doing live gigs, and you know, again, you get a lot of feedback when you play a gig and you figure out what works. And I really enjoy playing songs live in front of an audience because you get a whole different take on it than when you're playing the same recording you've made over
right.
and over again that
yeah.
you get very attached to. And it's just good. It's good for me in that record making and recording is all, you know, you can just keep controlling it. You can keep making it better. You can change this, change that, add that. When it's live, it really is a lot of trust. There's a lot of surrender that goes on. You know, it comes out, it's gone. You can't fix mm-hmm. it. You can't change it. And so it's like any muscle. It needs to be exercised. So I enjoy doing that. I want to do more of that. And lately, I've just been really excited creatively. I was in a recording studio. I had my writing recording studio in a bigger one, which was really fun and stimulating for me because so many people came in that building and it was very social and I met a lot of people and it was nice. It was actually nice to be a woman in there. I felt like, oh, I'm a musician, record producer, and they're all men around me doing that job. And I felt like I was carrying the torch for, you know, for the gals that, mm-hmm. I could do this job. I can do this job as well. Without a sense of competition, it was more out of a sense of pride. And
right.
So I love that. I love, oh, I get to come in the studio and walk up these stairs and open this door and, oh, my gosh, T-Bone Burnett's in here today. And, you know, it would be really exciting. And I moved out of there just for the ease of just being back at home and writing. And, you know, it's now really starting to work for me in a way that my kids go to school and I go downstairs and have this room where I can do everything except live drums and making these little pieces that I just am so excited by. And it feels so great that I can do that without having to, you know, jump through a lot of hoops and get a budget and all of that. I can just immediately create something. And I'm loving that. And that will turn into a record. And hopefully I'll be able to, you know, get some distribution and tour support and be able to do more than just put it out and just put it out.
Are you going to release a full album or an EP or anything?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, you can do anything. You could release a single. You could release an EP.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a side project. You can call yourself something else. And, I mean, it's just, I think it's really healthy to not limit oneself and just stay creative. And, in fact, it doesn't just have to be music. I think everything bleeds into other things in a really healthy way. Whatever I do in one area of my life where I'm up and risking and you know, back to that, when there's been times in my life when I was a lot younger where I'd be out of work and I wouldn't have anything going on and I'd want to do music and I was so, you know, so ambitiously set on I must do music, I must get a deal or I must, you know, I had a bad case of grandiosity. Anyway, every time that I said, I just need to get out and I get a job. Like I remember when I was in London, I worked at the Actors Center in the cafe. You know, I would get people the food while they were sitting in the reception area before class or after class. And the second I took that job and maybe sold a keyboard, the phone rings. You know, would you like to go on tour with Brian Ferret?
Of course.
Happened so many times. Where the universe is saying, you know, you're fixed on an outcome.
Right.
You're fixed on that outcome, and then you lock yourself down in your room in your house, and you're not coming out till you get your outcome. It's really, there's a lot of ego in that. There's just, I'm going to control life, and if life doesn't happen by my terms, I'm not going to show up to it.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I say, you know what, I got to show up, you know, life is still in session right now while I'm waiting for A, B, and C to happen. And whenever I just get out and about and do stuff, there's something that, you know, the feng shui of life just suddenly changed. All the energy would get moved around. And music stuff would come of it. That's how it has worked for me.
Well, so, if you could do anything other than music, what would it be?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of things that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a marine biologist at one point.
Really?
I know, yeah, now I would get seasick, so I'm reneging on that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Well, I like traveling a lot. I like traveling, and I like people, and I like coming across people from different backgrounds. So, you know, anything that would involve doing that sort of stuff would be good. I actually enjoy public speaking. So, I haven't got the confidence to sit down and write a whole novel right now. I don't feel like I have, you know, a big message that could be in a big book. I feel like I can put in a song, but not, you know, in 300 pages. But I really, because of performing, I feel comfortable in front of an audience speaking. And most people, it's their worst terror.
Yeah,
public speaking is one of the, and here you are on the radio. How did
I
that
know,
happen?
I know. It's different for some reason doing it this way. If I have to stand in front of a group of people, oh, my gosh,
mm-hmm.
you'll see me freak out big time.
mm-hmm.
This way it's a little bit easier. It's like talking to your friend on the phone. So.
That's
well, you
nice.
Really are. That's what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah, and people are listening to our conversation in the multitudes. You know?
Yeah, but
yeah,
I don't think
true.
About that.
Sure, no pleasure. I know, and Pam and I have this discussion a lot because she always says, you know, I don't want to do the show by myself. And I'm like, oh, but you're great at it. And she just, you know, we have this back and forth ongoing, you know, dialogue about this very thing. But it really is like talking on the phone because technically you are on the phone. Like you say, there's just, you know, quite a few people listening in on the conversation. But if you, you know, it's just a matter of thinking of it as you're just on the phone talking with someone, you know, just forget that people are listening kind of thing.
Yeah.
That could be dangerous.
That is true.
It could be dangerous.
That is true. That is, yes, that's true. Well, I guess you forget, but you're still mindful if there is such a thing. So,
yeah. Okay.
No. Someday I hope to get over that fear, but I don't know. At my age, you know, I often wonder if that's ever going to happen. But. I have to keep it to thinking that I'm talking to you and I'm talking with Dawn and that's all there is to it, you know. And then after the show is over, when I see how many live listeners I have, I go, oh, I'm glad I didn't think about that.
I'm glad I'm not thinking about it as well. Well, you know, the thing too is that the more personal you are, the more universal you are because everybody basically has the same stuff going on. I mean, that's why great actors and great movies, you know, we love them and feel like we're close to them because they're letting out their raw emotions and experiences and we feel like, oh, that's me. They're talking about
mm-hmm.
me.
Right.
So, not censoring can be a very attractive trait, although then you have to live with the consequences of that. Yeah.
Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was really fun and a pleasure speaking with you, and we look forward to what you have coming up next. I hope you'll join us again and, you know, talk about what you released by that time.
Yeah, listeners, if they want to stay in touch with me, you can go to my website, which is louisegoffin.com. I get better at the .com part. Or you just put my name in, Louise Goffin Music in Google, and it'll take you to, you know, my Facebook page and that. And you can keep in touch there and even sign up for a mailing list, which you'll get a free download, and anything that comes up, you'll be notified.
Also on Twitter, at Louise Goffin, too, so that way
yes.
they, you know, can reach out to you. Are you on there often?
I'm on there less, but come on, tweet me just as an experiment. I want to see how many tweets I can get after this.
Okay,
hi.
There's your challenge, listeners. She'd love to hear from you. So it's at Louise Goffin. It's G-O-F-F-I-N. And just tweet her and say hello. How you doing? Love ya. Something. Oh, speaking of which, real quick before I let you go, when I tweeted out that, you know, the show was coming up in 45 minutes or so, I did get a tweet from Eileen Carey, and she says, wow, so cool. I love her. So there you go. You have a fan.
Oh, great. Thank you, Eileen.
And wonderful. Eileen is a singer-songwriter as well in California, so maybe you guys can connect.
Okay. via North Carolina and New York, that's really technology for you.
Right?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Well, thanks again. And you're going to the Grammys, or?
I am going to the Grammys. I'm going to, there's several Grammys that I'm going to. I'm going to one where there's a Lifetime Achievement Award being presented to my mother, who will not be there because she is in Australia right now touring.
Well, congratulations to her.
Yeah, and it's an amazing event, actually. It's not just her. It's Ravi Shankar. It's Glenn Gould. There's all these, Patti Page. I think there's maybe 11 people who are just really phenomenal in their contribution. And I've been told that of all the Grammy events that happen, this is the one where people come out of it, you know, with tears in their eyes, so moved because you know, you see these montages of what they did. It's supposed to be a very moving thing. And then I'm going to go attend the massive corporate telecast with all the big mega stars, which I haven't ever done that. I think I maybe did it in my 20s once.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember leaving electric blue beads and sequins in a trail everywhere I went that night.
Well, Dawn and I will look for you on TV.
In the audience.
Yes.
Okay, well, I wish you both well, and I wish you
Thank
get
you.
Better. And
Thank
every
you.
Listener who's sick, I wish you to get better. This flu, it's time to go. It's traveling around the United States.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's rampant. It's horrible.
Yep, it's time for it to move out over the ocean and stay there, and that's it.
Exactly.
But thank you for that, and please join us again sometime in the near future.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's very
You're
nice
very
to speak
welcome.
With you both.
All
thank
right. Thank you very much.
Well.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, yay, I made it through.
Yes, you did. I'm so proud of you.
I'm proud of me, too. I'm actually amazed, and I only coughed a few times, so hopefully you guys didn't hear me. But thanks for joining me again tonight, Dawn, and always having my back. And I look forward to what Louise has to offer because I listen to her music on SoundCloud and she's just totally awesome. So many different genres she hits on and everything she does is so wonderful to listen to. And tomorrow we have Eric Zulli and he's the Hollywood It guy. So tune in. Maybe he'll have some juicy gossip and he'll talk about the Easy Way and social media and whatever else comes out of his mouth. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, you never know. He's a talker for sure, so it should be a great interview.
Yes.
I think
that'll
I've met my match.
Yeah, I think so. And that'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the interview. And please touch base with Louise at Louise Goffin on Twitter and say hello to her. I think she needs some friends. So good night, everybody. God bless. And we'll see you again tomorrow.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by... One taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.